Okay, Parshas Miketz, really Vayeshev. We're going to be going back a little bit into Vayeshev and Miketz, Tavshin Samach Tes, and of course Hanukkah. This class is divided up into three sections. Section number one is a analysis, really, of how Yosef in Parshas Miketz brought the brothers exactly to where he wanted them to be. He brought them to a state of perfect tshuva. That was his plan. That was why he did all the things he did there in Parshas Miketz with the brothers. And how that is expressed step by step through the story of Yosef and his brothers and all of the complicated negotiations between them. And that's step number one, how Yosef brought them to tshuva for their sin. Now, for their sin of... Really a tremendous lack of achdus. The fact that they could rip the family apart by getting rid of the beloved son of Yaakov, the son of Rachel. And also there's some implication in here that they weren't the only ones who needed tshuva, and they weren't the only ones who needed tikkun. He's not completely blameless himself. And that also came to its tikkun. And so we're going to analyze the first, how he brought them to tshuva, and secondly, in depth, delving into the machshava of all the way back of the Chazal up until modern day philosophers, the essence of the sin itself, what was really happening. And then the third part is we're going to connect it to Hanukkah. So starting with Parshas, starting in the beginning of Miketz here. The beginning of Miketz, well, really starting with Yosef's meeting up with the brothers. Not the very beginning of Miketz, but let's turn to Perek Mem Beis, Pasuk Zayin. There are three psukim here that read in order, seem to be telling us that Yosef concocted his plan not before he ever saw the brothers, but after the brothers came to him. So if you look at the psukim, it says, "Vayavo acha Yosef v'yishtachavu lo apayim arta." They all bowed down to him, all the way to the ground. Now, "Vayar Yosef v'zachav," he saw his brothers, and he recognized them, and he acted like a stranger to them, and he spoke harshly to them, and he said, "Where have you come from?" And they said, "Meretz Canaan, to get food." Now, up until here, all we know is Yosef recognizes his brothers, and he's not going to make any overtures, and he's not going to be sympathetic to them, and he's not going to tell them who he is. He has no connection to them. Then the pasuk tells us again, "Vayakir Yosef es achiv." Again, he recognized them, and again they did not recognize him. And then pasuk tes tells us, after he recognized them a second time, "Vayizkar Yosef es chalamos asher chalam lahem." Then he remembered his dreams that he dreamed for them. That word "for them" is very important. "Vayomer lehem." And then he said, "Miraglim atem," "you are spies." And he started this whole little game that he began to play with them. Now, the reason he told them that they were spies is he wanted an excuse to jail them. What happened in the course of these three psukim? Clearly, Yosef didn't know whether he'd ever see his brothers again or not, and when they showed up in front of him, he didn't have a plan in order. But the Torah tells us that his first reaction to them was cold. You know, he was as cold as can be. He didn't want to make a connection to them. He didn't feel any responsibility to them. He let them be in their world, and he remained in his world. But then something happened. He obviously began to think. And what he began to think about is his dreams. And he realized, "Asher cholam lahem." This indicates a whole change in perspective. We don't know how much went on here between the first pasuk and the second pasuk in Yosef's head. My grandfather Schwab points out here that Yosef understood at this point, when they showed up in Mitzrayim and he was the king and they needed food and they were turning to him to survive, and that his family, his own family's survival was going to be because of him, that he would be the source of their survival, and they would turn to him in deference, and he would have the ability to, in a sense, control them and to protect them and to sustain them, he realized that those dreams he had dreamed were about them, which means they weren't about him. What we're saying here is that clearly Yosef originally had dreams, and the dreams were obvious that he was destined to rule over them. And we'll get back to his dreams too. The dream about all of the bundles of straw bowing down to him, and the dream of the stars and the sun and the moon bowing down to him, he was clearly destined to dominate, to rule them. They would have to defer to him. But in the beginning, Rashi tells us, the Chazal tell us, that he took his role, his special role as greater than them, higher than them, very personally. Remember it says, "V'hu na'ar," he was like a young man, and Rashi says he used to do his hair, and he was involved with his beauty and his looks because he was being groomed to be important, to be a king, and he had the Ksonas Pasim, and he was treated differently. It became clear to him that perhaps all of this was not for his personal greatness. This was for them. This was for Klal Yisrael. This was to set up a future where they would survive, and he really was raised to greatness on their behalf, not on account of himself. When he recognized that his dreams were for them, then he also recognized, it seems, that instead of, in those early days, bringing them together as a family and playing his role on their behalf, he engendered great jealousy and hatred because he perhaps thought about it more for himself than for them. When he realized it was for them, he realized everybody, the whole family, had to come back together. He has obviously been in the process of doing tshuva, because he here realizes that his greatness is not his, and perhaps it was a cause for their jealousy. And they, of course, have to do tshuva, because even if he misread his own greatness and took it a little bit too seriously, he was elevated by Yaakov, he was destined for great things, the dreams were true, and they had no right to destroy him just because they were jealous of the fact that he was destined for more greatness than they were. They also had to do tshuva. So here Yosef, after recognizing them again, thinking it all, realizing it was all for them, sets out on a plan to bring them to tshuva. Now we know there are steps in tshuva, specific steps, and they go through these steps, A, B, C. One by one, they go through the steps of tshuva, with Yosef prodding them from behind. So here are the steps. We know the first step, Rambam says in Hilchos Tshuva, is Chayev Adam Lisvados, Perek Rishon Pasuk Aleph. If a person transgresses, kishayas a tshuva v'yashuv mecheta, when he does tshuva and returns from his sin, chayev lesvadus lefnei hakel baruch hu, he must do vidoy. He must admit the sin that he has, and we know also that in addition to vidoy, vidoy doesn't mean anything. If it's lip service and there's no emotion backing it up, there has to be charata, regret. The first step we see is Yosef brings them to an admission of guilt and regret. He brings them to vidoy and charata, and the pasuk read carefully is also so much is hidden within the psukim here. The pasuk read carefully tells us that it was Yosef and Yosef's manipulations that brought them to tshuva. They learned from Yosef. He set the tone. After he throws Shimon in jail, now he chose Shimon because Shimon threw him in the pit. He wanted this to be midah keneged midah. And the only reason he called them spies is, as we said, give him an excuse to jail them. So when he has an excuse to jail them, he throws all of them in, and they're sitting there for 3 days. Everybody's sitting there, and the family is waiting back in Canaan, the women and the children, for the food, and it's not coming back. And in Pasuk Yud Zion, we see Vayesof Osam El Mishmar Shloshes Yamim. He has them in jail, the whole bunch of them, for 3 days. Vayomer Lehem Yosef Belo Ibayom Ashlishi. Now on the third day, he says to them, look at the strange wording of this pasuk. Zos Asu Vichiyu. This is what you should do in order to live. Es Elokim Ani Yare. It's a non sequitur. So, Mefarshim say here, Yosef said to them, basically here, I'm about to rethink my harsh stance towards you. The truth is, I shouldn't keep all of you in jail. It's not fair. It's too harsh. It's not merciful. I should send all of you home and keep you, one of you, in jail. So the next pasuk says, Im kenim atem achichem echad, Yayasar Bebeis Mishmarchem, if you are really truthful people, let one of you stay here, and the rest of you will go home. And don't forget, and you have to bring your younger brother, and then you won't die. Vayasu Kain. And they did that. So let's go back. He says to them, Zos asu v'chiyu, this is what you should do, so you should live. I fear God. I'm going to send you all home. Leave one of you here. Come back with your younger brother. Then you won't die. And they did it. So it sounds like they already went and came back with Binyamin. And then the next pasuk says, Vayomer ishel achiv, and each one said to his brother, Aval ashemim anachnu alachinu asherainu tzaras nafsho. We saw how bitter he was. We saw how his anguish of his heart. He pleaded. We didn't listen to him. We were hard-hearted. And that's why this is all happening. So, first of all, they learn a lesson from Yosef. He's rethinking his cruel stance, you know. And we didn't rethink our heartless, you know, insistence on blocking out his pleas and seeing his pain. And this is a non-Jewish king, already has some mercy. And he's the king of Egypt, who's considered practically like a god. And he can say he failed, so we fail too. But technically, let's go back into the Pesukim. My grandfather says here, Yosef was not telling them only what they should do in terms of bringing Binyamin. He was telling them what they should do and giving them an example, which is what they should do, which is to look into their hearts and do Cheshbon HaNefesh. When he said, Zos asu v'chiyu, this is what you should do, and then you will live, Es Elokim ani yare, he was saying, you should have Yiras Elokim like I do, and that's what you should do, and that's how you will live. Just like now, I'm about to announce to you that I've rethought my mistaken ways and I've been too harsh. Do the same thing. That's what you should do and live. Zos asu v'chiyu. Go back, rethink how you behaved. Do it out of fear of God. And you know what the pasuk says? Vayasu kein. They did it. And that vayasu kein is not talking about going and bringing Binyamin and getting back to Mitzrayim. That vayasu kein goes on the next pasuk. They said, Aval Hashemim anachnu. They did exactly what Yosef told them to do. To rethink their stubbornness, their heartlessness, and have Yiras Shamayim, and change their ways. Vayasu kein, and they did it, and they said vidoy, and they had charata, and Yosef taught them how to do this. That's step number one. But there's more than just vidoy and charata. There has to be concrete proof that the person will not return to the same sin again. That's called Kabbalah al Ha'asid. So Rambam says the following. Perek Sheni, Ezu hi tshuva gemura. What is real tshuva? He gives an example. Ze sheba liyado davar she'avarbo. Something arises, an opportunity arises, in which previously the person had sinned and transgressed. The efshar biyado laso. So, and again, he has the possibility to violate the mitzvah the same way, to transgress again. The parash, but he holds back. Below asa, and he doesn't do it again. Mipnei hatshuva, not because he's scared or he doesn't have the ability, but strictly because of tshuva, he doesn't violate that sin again. Lo miyira, lo mikishlon koach, not because he's afraid, not because he's too weak. Ketzad, and he gives an example of a man that was involved with a woman, be'avera, and he was alone with her, and he loved her the same amount, and he was in the same situation, the same city. Everything was the same, and he didn't sin because he did tshuva gemura. So that's the next step. The next step is proof that the person in the same situation will not sin again. So he asks them to bring Binyamin, to separate Binyamin from Yaakov, which he knows will cause Yaakov distress, and protect Binyamin because they already know that Binyamin is in grave danger coming down to Mitzrayim. This Yosef can do anything. This king can do anything. He's already mistreating them for no reason. He can mistreat Binyamin. So he wants to see if they're going to pledge their absolute loyalty to Binyamin. And he pushes even further. When they bring Binyamin down, he goes ahead and he puts Binyamin in the same situation he was in. They hated him because of the Ksonas Pasim, because he was preferred. What does he go and do to Binyamin as soon as he sees Binyamin? He gives him extra clothing and he starts giving him gifts. But the brothers assure him that they have pledged their life to protect this child, and they will do anything to protect this child, and they will not be jealous of this child, and they will not turn against this child on the way. And the truth is, Rav Moshe Shapira brings down that when Yosef saw that they came down with Binyamin and Binyamin was safe, and when he treated Binyamin better, there was no hostility, so he invited them to eat. And it says there in here in Mem Gimel Lamed Daled Vayishtu. Here, let's look at Mem Gimel Lamed Daled. Look at, and he gives Binyamin five times as much as all of them, right? They drank Vayishtu Vayishkaru Imo. They drank and they became shikr with him. And Chazal say there that Amru Chazal, Rashi brings down, from the day they sold him, they never drank, they never became intoxicated, and he never did either. Lo shasu yayin, velo hu shasa yayin. They didn't, and he didn't. Nobody ever drank. So why were they drinking now? So he brings down that Yosef sensed, and they sensed, that they had really done tshuva, and the joy of knowing that they had really done tshuva, that they had protected Binyamin, that they were putting their life on the line for this child of Rachel, filled them with so much elation that for the first time in all the years, they were all able to drink together. And they were all able to rejoice. So Yosef put them into a situation and they passed the test. As soon as they passed the test, as soon as in the beginning of Vayigash, when he pushes them one more time with the goblet in Yosef in Binyamin's sack to see would they ultimately give their lives for him, not just not be jealous of him like with the clothing with extra portions, but would they give their lives for him? And Yehuda does. Then that's there's no reason to continue anymore this little game, this charade he's playing, and instantly he reveals himself, and Chazal say that's when we'll be in the end of days too, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees that Klal Yisrael have reached the point he wants us to get to, then it'll instantly be over. In a flash, everything will be over. All the trouble, all the darkness, all the confusion will end, and the clarity will dawn, and everyone will see what it was that we were going through and why, just like when Yosef said, Ani Yosef, and we've talked about this many times, it's not for today. He didn't have to say anything else. All their confusion, all their questions, why this was happening to them, how this man knew their ages, why this man cared about Binyamin, why all the constant questions, everything they wondered about in two words was crystal clear. Everything made sense and everything came full circle. Well, we are going to get to Asara Arugei Malchus. Now, that's part number one. The part is that he does successfully bring them to tshuva, and the truth is he relieves them of a huge burden. They themselves feel relieved of the burden, and he has succeeded. But his success in bringing proving that they've eliminated their kinna, their jealousy, and their hatred, came only by way of him first eliminating his sense of power or importance, and becoming objective, really adopting the midah of Emes, Yaakov's midah, and realizing it wasn't about him, it was about them. Let's go into the sin itself. So on a simple level, this was jealousy, but nothing's on a simple level. Here is a medrash. This comes on the words of Ksonas Pasim. Okay? The medrash says, Ksonas Pasim, that's what Yaakov gave him. That's what started the whole thing. Haksona she'asa HaKadosh Baruch Hu la'Adam. This is the clothing Hashem made for Adam. And this is the clothing she'lakcha Esav min Nimrod, that Nimrod stole, and that Esav took from Nimrod. V'hi bigdei Esav. And then it became the clothing that Yaakov took from Esav, when he went and got the bracha. So these ksonas pasim, according to Chazal, represent a lot. What if they're the clothing Hashem made for Adam, what do they represent? And they were held by Nimrod, stolen by Esav, stolen once more by Yaakov, warned to get the brachas, and now given to Yosef. So the ksonas pasim means a lot. Obviously, if they're given to Adam, if they're the clothing of Adam, and Adam is the perfect creation before the sin, and the one that's supposed to bring about the awareness of Hashem in this world, And the one that's supposed to ultimately dominate all of the rest of creation is man, above all other species, above everything below us. The Kiddush Hashem, the Tzelem Elokim, the one who wears them is playing God's role. No question about it. Now, Yaakov took these begadim from Esav, and we spoke a lot about that. Why would Esav have the begadim? Were they ever legitimately his? Well, if he had not given up the Bechora, and he had not turned his back on his role, he would have legitimately worn these begadim. And he himself would have also been part and parcel of bringing the awareness of Hashem to this world, of the Tzelem being the official, the quintessential Tzelem Elokim, side by side with Yaakov. But Yaakov took these ksonas pasim. He had to take them from Esav, and Esav had to be relieved of his duties, and Esav never was happy about that. He never really adjusted to the fact that he lost it and he gave it up, and he constantly wanted to be known as the supreme man, perfect man, But he didn't want the responsibilities that went along with it, and we've spoken about this. Yaakov gives these clothing to Yosef. Yosef is the extension of Yaakov. Remember we spoke about this? The lahava, the spark that extends the koach of Yaakov. Now, the four main children involved in the sale of Yosef was Reuven, Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda. And we've spoken about them too. They are the four B'nai Leah. And we've spoken about the idea, the first four, that what they were representing was the kochos of Esav brought into Klal Yisrael. Leah was the fitting match for Esav, remember this? But because Esav abdicated, Leah had to be married to Yaakov. Yaakov took Esav's role and Esav's wife. And the children she bore were the kochos of Esav. We spoke about Reuven, that she said, look, what's the difference between my son and my husband's brother, Esav, the one I would have married. My son brings me Dudaim from the Hefker, and Esav takes from Gezel. Other examples also, Shimon and Levi were swordsmen, just like Esav. Yehuda, the grandfather of David, who was called an Admoni, like Esav. Those type of kochos were clearly in the first four children of Leah. When the first four children of Leah see the Ksonas Pasim, which was destined really, which was in Esav's possession, which was their real heritage in a certain way, the kochos of Esav, had they been used positively, were their kochos. When they see Yosef, the son of Rachel, with the Ksonas Pasim, it engenders in them the same thing it engendered in Esav when he saw Yaakov, and when Yaakov took the bracha that he didn't want, and the bechorah that he didn't want. The two character traits that Esav really displayed towards Yaakov were kinah, jealousy, and sinah, hatred. And if you look in Perek Chav Zayin, Pasuk Mem Aleph, there's one word that combines both of them. Perek Chav Zayin, Pasuk Mem Aleph. That is on page 140. Vayistom Esav es Yaakov al habracha asher bercho aviv hi. That word vayistom is a combination of sinna and kinna. It's a deep form of hatred, of jealousy and hatred, and a desire to destroy Yaakov. Those were the midos of Esav, kinna and sinna. Now, Yosef was the extension of Yaakov. His job really was not to bring Esav and Esav's, in a sense, heirs, so the kochos of Esav, back to that point of tension and conflict with Yaakov, but as an extension of Yaakov, be ma'ache, join together the whole family, the kochos of B'nai Rachel and the kochos of B'nai Leah. If Esav is kinna and sinna, which the Rosh HaTevas are kash, that's the famous Rashi in Vayeshev, in Vayetze, that Beis Yaakov Laish, Beis Esav is Kash. So if Kina and Sina are Kash, well, the Shalah says that Yaakov and his extension Yosef, they are Eish, Emes and Shalom. Emes comes from Yaakov, that's his Midah. We're not talking about that now, but you've heard a ton about that. The Midah of Yaakov is Emes. The Midah of Yosef was meant to be Shalom in terms of bringing Shalom to the entire family, being Ma'ached, joining together everybody under his guidance, all the children of Leah, and their kochos, all the children of Rachel, him and his brother, the whole family together, Bilhah and Zilpah, whose children are really attributed in a sense to the Imos, and bringing achdus to Klal Yisrael. But Emes and Shalom don't always go together, and when one of them are missing, you have really a burning fire in Eish. There are the people that are very emistic. They don't generally generate shalom if you're perfectly emistic. And if there's a lot of shalom and there's no truth, there's also Eish. It's also completely destructive. It's a very, very hard combination to have emes and shalom together, and then the Eish that's produced doesn't burn, but it illuminates and it enlightens and it warms. It's not easy at all. Emes and shalom are not natural partners, or it's two different energies really between emes and shalom, and yet Yaakov is emes, and it seems to be that Yosef's job was shalom. And shalom in the end is the ultimate achievement. It's the achievement of all the achievements. Shalom among Klal Yisrael. Peace on earth. That's ultimately Oseh Shalom Bimromo. Hu Yaseh Shalom is how we end. Everything ends with shalom. But true shalom. So this, if Yosef was wearing the Ksonas Pasim, and his ultimate job is to be Adam in a sense, the Gemara says that Yaakov is Shufraya de Adam. Yaakov is like has the countenance of Adam. And then we learn, Ela told us Yaakov, Yosef, and Rashi says, Yosef had the same face as Yaakov. And Yaakov was like Adam. And Yosef is now wearing the Ksonas Pasim that Yaakov took from Esav. That means Yosef is supposed to bring it all to completion in the end through Shalom. Now, the problem is that it doesn't lead to Shalom at all. As soon as he puts on the Ksonas Pasim, Esav's midos flare up in the brothers, and all they can display is kina and sinna, as is expressed directly in the psukim. So if you look back, for example, to Perek Lamid Zayin, Pasuk Dalid Hey and Ches, Lamid Zayin, Dalid Hey and Ches, Vayiru Echav, Ki Oso Ahav Avihem Mikol Echav, and his brothers saw that the father loved him above all, Vayisnu Oso. They hated him. Now look at the next words. V'lo yachlu dabro l'shalom. There was no shalom. They could not conduct themselves with him in shalom. And his whole tafkid, in the end, was shalom. But it was impossible. Continue to psukim hey and ches. Maybe because Vayachlom Yosef chalom, he dreamed. He told his brothers, what was the result? Vayosifu od sinoso, they hated him even more. Now, the dream that he dreamed that engendered hatred was the dream of the straw. The dream, though, of the stars, that did engender hatred. Look in Pasuk Yud Aleph. Vayiknu bo echav. They were jealous of him. The dream of the stars bowing down to him engendered kina. The dream of the wheat, or the straw really, engendered sinna. It's very interesting. If he would materially, if he would, dominate them economically, control the money, tell them how to set them up, be the one who they would have to turn to for money, they would hate him. But if he would be greater than them, like the stars and the sun and the moon, then they already were jealous of him. But these were the midos of Esav inflamed. That's the Eish he produced. He didn't produce the Eish of the Emes and the Shalom. Now, we said before, because at this point he too was not perfect, not developed completely, and he was nogeya, it seems, bedavar, and there was a personal agenda on his part, and that led really to a personal agenda on their part. In an ideal situation, what should have been? They should have been able to defer to Yosef as an exceptional son, destined for greatness, destined to take care of them through the midah of Rachel, which was arvas, which we spoke about, responsibility for their siblings, responsibility for each other, bring the world to Akara Hashem in a state of galus, which is what Yosef did, ensure the absolute strength, as we spoke about, to resist assimilation and intermarriage. All of this was Yosef's kochos. They should have been able to accept him. But the truth is, when a person takes a position of rulership, of domination, and it's not selfless, it never can engender love or trust. It engenders hatred and jealousy, because one person is lording it over the others for their own reasons. So it's a tricky, tricky path to walk. And in the beginning, it was difficult. However, once we realize that, when Yosef realizes that he remembers the dreams, Asher Chalam Lahem, and he eliminates for himself his own personal negias, then he can really fall back upon the Mida of Yaakov, which he is an extension of, which is Emes. When he comes to Emes, he can bring Shalom. When he can conduct himself with pure Emes, that everything is for Klal Yisrael and not for him, and by the way, through his decision or his understanding of that Emes of Yaakov, which is self-negating, it's a stance of Bitul Hayesh, he is able not just to bring them to tshuva, to reunite the family, but as much as they tried to apologize to him and they felt so guilty, he continuously reminds them and reassures them, it's not your fault, you did nothing. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent me here, I have no antagonism towards you. I was destined to be here. I was destined to set things up for you. You think you're God. You can't interfere with God's plans. You did what you did, but I have no, you know, I have no grudge against you. He continuously related to them with absolute close, you know, from his part, closeness and connection, and he didn't hold them aloof, and he never tried to punish them. Because all of this, he realized clearly, was not about him and his greatness. So when he brings them to this state, what happens is they do come to a state where they're willing to accept who he is and accept the role that he plays. And they do eliminate, as we see, the kina and the sinna, the jealousy and the hatred. And they really find themselves once more in a state of achdus and shalom, which is the final state of Klal Yisrael, a reunion between all the various parts of Klal Yisrael. So that fire that Yaakov and Esav represent together can burn if the Emes doesn't allow for Shalom, or the Shalom doesn't allow for Emes, which is also equally the case. There's too much Shalom, there's no more Emes. And nobody wants to say anything, and nobody wants to make a fight, and nobody wants to take a stand. There's also no Emes, and then it's destructive either way. The difficulty is the combination of Yaakov and Esau, Yaakov and Yosef, of Emes and Shalom. The only way for Emes to be accepted is if it's seen as completely selfless, completely objective, that the person who is conveying what is Emes doesn't have any personal agenda at all and isn't interested in any type of vendetta, and there's nothing, no secret hidden plan underneath the surface. And then the Emes, if the person is pure Emes, then what they say as Emes perhaps can be accepted and can lead to Shalom. And we've seen this in many examples. Now, the question is Chanukah. There's something very strange here in the first Rashi in Vayeshev and a Gemara in Shabbos that brings down a very, very old Mishnah. Here, if you look in the first Rashi in Vayeshev, where it says, page 198, where it says here, Vayeshev Yaakov, the Aleph, there's a Dover Acher in parentheses. See, here's the Rashi. Listen to this. Vayeshev Yaakov. Hapishtani Hazeh, this Pishtani, this flax dealer, that's Kash, okay, this right, Hapishtani Hazeh, Nichnesu Gmalav Teunim Pishtan, he had these camels laden down with flax. Now there was a blacksmith, okay, you know, blacksmith works with fire, and the Pachmi, the blacksmith, wondered, Anna Yikones Kol HaPishtan Hazeh, how will all of this Pishtan get into my, I guess, furnaces? This is too much. It's a huge amount. It doesn't fit in my store. How am I going to turn this into fire? Haya Pikech Echad Meshevlo. So one smart man said to him, all you need is Nitzus Echad Yotze. One little spark has to go out from your hammer and it's going to burn it all up. This sounds familiar, doesn't it? One little spark from the blacksmith's hammer is going to take care of all the kash, all the pishtun. So he says this is like Yaakov. He saw all of the previously listed leaders and great men and chieftains and warlords of Esav, and he said, how am I ever going to survive them? How am I ever going to overcome them? How can I conquer them all? Ela told us Yaakov Yosef. Beis Yaakov is the Eish, Beis Yosef is the flame, Beis Esav is the Kash. One nitzos, one spark, Yotzei mi Yosef. So if it's Kulam, he burns them all up. That's the first Rashi in Vayeshev. Esav and Yaakov together, they're the Eish. And they destroy the Kash, really, of Esav, the Kina and the Sina, because when there's absolute truth with no hidden agendas, then there's really, it eliminates Kina and Sina, and everybody can be b'shalom accepting the emes. So, there is almost no reference to Hanukkah in the Mishnah. You probably have heard about this. There's rare references. Here's one of them. The Gemara in Shabbos discusses, it's trying to derive a Hanukkah law, and so it's looking in the Mishnah if there's any reference to Hanukkah at all that it can pick up and learn something about Hanukkah. So they go back into the Mishnah, a very old Mishnah, because almost nothing about Hanukkah. And here's the Mishnah. And there is a reference in the end of this Mishnah to Hanukkah. So here's the Mishnah. I'm going to read it in English. We learn there in the Mishnah, if a spark flies out from under a blacksmith's hammer and went and damaged another's property, the blacksmith is liable. Now, what if a camel laden with flax was passing in the public domain, and its flax protruded into a shop and was ignited by the shopkeeper's light, and the burning flax set a mansion outside ablaze, the camel's owner is liable, okay, for the damage of the building. But okay, well, then the camel's owner is liable for all the damage of the building. However, if the shopkeeper placed his light outside the shop in a public domain, then the shopkeeper is liable. Rabbi Yehuda says, in the case of a Hanukkah light, the shopkeeper is not liable. Okay? So that's the Mishnah that has a reference to Hanukkah. Now, isn't it strange that this same mashal that's used regarding Yosef being Eish and Esav being Kash is associated with Hanukkah? So if the Hanukkah lights are burning and it ignites all the Kash, then because it's a Hanukkah light, then the shopkeeper is not Chayav. So what we're clearly saying here is that the fire of Yosef and Yaakov has something to do with the fire of the Hanukkah lights. Rashi's not picking this Gemara with this Mishnah to put it in the first Rashi of Vayeshev for no reason. There's an association between the light of Yosef, the Eish of Yosef and Yaakov, and the Eish of the menorah. Rav Huttner brings down that, the Meshech Chachma brings down on the Smichas Parshios, he brings down the Eben Ezra really, on the Smichas Parshios between Bahalosa the end of Naso and the beginning of Bahalosa. Turn to 772. The last pasuk in Parshas Naso says, "Ubavo Moshe el Oel Moed, ledaber ito." When Moshe came to Oel Moed to speak to Hashem, "Vayishma es hakol." He heard the call, the voice or the sound of Hashem. Medaber Elov, speaking to him, may Allah kaporas asher al aron ha'edus mi ben shnei akuvim yedaber Elov. It says that when Moshe came to Ol Moed, he would hear the voice of Hashem, the message from on top of the lid between the kuvim and the aron in the Ol Moed. That's how Hashem spoke to him. That's the last pasuk in Nasa. The first pasuk in Bahalosha
V'edaber Shem Moshe Lemar, daber el Aaron, v'yamarta elav b'haloscha es haneros. It's about lighting the menorah. El mul pnei ha-menorah ya'iru shiva saneros. And now Rashi says here, the famous Rashi, which is not the direction we're going in, that the smichas of Parshas is that Naso is about the gifts of the Nesiim, and Aaron didn't bring any, and he felt very bad. So Hashem said, no, don't worry, what you're going to do, your avod is greater than all of them, you're going to light the menorah, and so will your grandchildren, the chashmonaim, and that light will be forever, much more than the gifts of the Nesiim. But that's not the smichas Parshas of the last pasuk and the first pasuk. It's just the general context, the general story. The Aven Ezra says here that the smichas is the following. There's a halacha, really, that Hashem only spoke to Moshe b'yom, during the day. But at the time that the menorah was lit, it was considered yom, so Hashem would speak to him even at night as long as the menorah was lit. So we have an understanding here that when the menorah is lit, the whole atmosphere is called yom. It illuminates to such a point that it's considered daytime. And if it's considered daytime, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu can speak to Moshe. There's also a very interesting ancient version of the Gemara that, you know, the Gemara that says the mezuzah is on the right and the menorah is on the left. And in the Shiltos of Rav Achai Gaon, very old, it says a phrase that we don't normally see in the Gemara, which says, and a man wearing tzitzis in between them. Just a little pill pull here. If the menorah, when it's lit, is considered yom, then that explains why the Gemara says that a man wearing tzitzis should be standing between the mezuzah and the menorah. Why is that? Tzitzis normally is a halacha only during the day, or isem osam. But if the menorah creates the experience or the reality of yom, then a person has to be wearing tzitzis if he's standing next to his menorah. So, in any case, the menorah itself, the light of the menorah, is considered day, and therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu can speak to Moshe as long as the menorah, the lights of the menorah, are lit. So we understand that when we light the lights of the menorah, and the reference to Chanukah is about the Eish of Yosef burning up the Kash, that in the end, what allows a person to be in a state of light. Light means bahir, clear, clarity. When Moshe got Nevuah, that means that he was able to see clearly. Pure emes. He could hear HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaking to him in absolute clarity. There was no darkness associated. Darkness is always confusion, opaqueness, you know, not quite knowing, not quite seeing, not being able to find your way. Many competing forces and not no clarity. Darkness always represents that time of desperation and of hopelessness that comes from the lack of clarity. If Moshe is able to receive Nevuah because it's Yom, what we're really speaking about, that light, the light of the menorah, is about clarity, is about truth. It's about being able to see exactly what's real. And that's why Moshe could receive Nevuah. We said truth, emes. The emes of the Eish, the burn, the warmth and the illumination of the Eish, that's the really associated with clarity, with seeing clearly. The problem is that we learn a lot of information, but we don't always see clearly. What allows a person to see things the way they are in truth, the emes, which will destroy all the misconceptions, all the kina and sinna that comes with not seeing the emes, and restore shalom? How does it work that a person can see things clearly? How does it work that it's yom when we light the menorah? So there's a little secret associated with the light of the menorah that's where the Meshech Chachma brings down. He says that the aura of the menorah is associated here now with simcha. Ora zeh simcha. He brings down a source. Ora zeh simcha. And he brings down an interesting source that when Hashem separated the light, Vayar lekim es ha'or kitov, and by the way, he called that or yom, and that or of the 25th of Kislev burst into the world, the 25th of Elul burst into the world on the 25th of Kislev, that same or. Says that when he separated that or for tzaddikim in the future, so that aura had a great simcha. Tzamach simcha gedola. There's some type of association between simcha and aura. And I believe it's connected also to emes. The Gemara says the following, La'olam yilmad adam kol ma shalibo chafetz bo. A person should always learn whatever their heart desires, whatever they find interesting and appealing, what moves them. Same as Chanoch l'Nar al Pidarko. Similar kind of concept. Everybody has a different way of seeing things. They care about different things. They're moved by different things. Did you ever notice that there is no halacha anywhere that in terms of Talmud Torah or Lima Torah, you have to learn 3 psukim of Chumash, 4 psukim of Navi, a half a daf of Gemara, 3 Mishnayos, and 2 halachas. There is no such law of what you have to learn anywhere. You can learn whatever you like. You like diktuk, you can learn Hirsch all day and words and etymology of words. You like gematrias, you can learn the Bala Turim. You like philosophy, you go learn Ramban. You like mystical thought, Ramban or also Ramban or Rambam for philosophy. You want to learn halacha, study halacha all day, read all the halachas for him. You can do whatever you want to do. Whatever moves the person, that is what they're supposed to learn. Why is that? Because the R of Torah, which the menorah symbolizes, and we know, as we spoke about last week, that the first tkufa of Jewish history was also about R, but the R that Hashem brought to the world through breaking open the heavens, through Har Sinai, through Kabbalah Satorah, that great R, that's the first tkufa. But the R of the whole second tkufa of Jewish history that we are living is the R that comes from the people. The light and the illumination and the emes that comes from us. This is the era of chachamim, as we said, not neviim, of each person thinking, learning, being machadesh, whether it be on a large scale or on their own little small scale. The R that comes from within ourselves, that's the R of this tkufa. That's the Torah we produce based on everything Hashem has given us. The thing is that a person will only learn, is only capable of learning something if they derive pleasure from it. We've all been through the experience of cramming, learning a ton of information, and 5 days later, we can't remember any of it because there was no pleasure in acquiring that knowledge. Rav Hunter explains that every one of our senses connects to something in order for it to be utilized. For example, the eye is worthless without light waves. The ear is useless without sound waves. Right? So the mind is useless without the connection that it has to the material it's learning through pleasure. If there's no pleasure, the mind is useless. It can't really absorb or receive the information. There has to be a simcha, a joy of learning, and that joy is really very specific to the person learning the Torah. Whatever speaks to them, whatever moves their neshama. If a person learns what they want to learn, then they can bring out through the light of this world we're living in now, the light of Torah that comes from inside every person can only be really nurtured and illuminate those around them if it comes truly be'emes from inside the person and it's part of the person and it's not just lip service and it's not just something that somebody told them that they have to repeat. But it truly is their essence. They see it, they feel it, they understand it, it means something to them. And then that light is extended, and that light can touch other people, if it's real, if it's emes. If the Torah is emes and there's pleasure in it, then it can dispel the negativity, it can create emes outside of itself, it could create shalom, it could be positive, it could be illuminating and warm. However, if the Torah isn't emes, if it's not coming from a place of truth, in other words, it's not coming from a place where the person is connected to it in a real way and therefore deriving pleasure from it, if a person is not connected to the Torah that they're learning or they're teaching, it could be very destructive, and it certainly doesn't help anybody. And it could actually be very destructive to the person themselves and create a lot of animosity and frustration and negativity in the person. It can destroy the person if they feel they're compelled to behave and to think and to do in a way that they get no pleasure from. Becomes an esh. So the light of Hanukkah that Yosef is compared to, that esh, is the esh that really burns through the gullus. It's the esh that each and every person produces from their own Torah. And their Torah can only really have that effect if they truly are connected to it and they derive great pleasure from it. And the way Yosef, in a sense, connected to his MS, it was disconnecting, in a sense, himself from his role for all of, for history. Becoming objective, being mevatel himself, And then the brothers could be mevatel themselves and defer to Yosef. Just want to end with this pasuk in Tehillim, which we're all so familiar with. It says, in Perek Aleph, Ki b'toras Hashem cheftso. First, the Torah is called Toras Hashem. And what's the next line? U'b'toraso yagia yomam v'layla. It goes from Toras Hashem, b'toraso. First, it started out as, it's all Toras Hashem. But when the person attaches to what part of Torah they respond to, which moves them, and that's the part they spend their energies developing and expressing, then it's called b'toraso. And it says, b'toraso yagia yomam v'layla. Then a person has no desire to run away from the Torah, has no desire to be finished with, you know, with the responsibility for Torah. That type of Torah that the person is connected to drives them and pushes them, and they have a yearning for that Torah, and they never really will separate or abandon that Torah for the rest of their lives because it's emes. So our hope is that each and every person here has their own personality and their own way of seeing things, and the Torah they produce is uniquely theirs, and that Torah should illuminate all the people around them. It should always be a Torah of warmth and light, and not chas v'shalom of any type of eish or negativity or destruction or anything that brings that out in others. If we see that it brings out any type of negativity in others, then it has to be adjusted within ourselves. All right, everybody. Have a wonderful Hanukkah.